understanding different communities, and we're going to start in the San Francisco Bay Area. It is one of the hot spots for attacks against Asians that we're hearing so much about. Now, first off, AAPI, it refers to Asian American and Pacific Islanders. The online incident tracker, Stop AAPI Hate, recorded 2,808 reports across the U.S. since the pandemic began. Over 700 of those incidents were reported in the Bay Area. They involve name-calling, verbal abuse, pushing, shunning. In January, a Thai man was shoved to the ground and died from his injuries in San Francisco. Several elders have been attacked in Oakland, and that is where the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, APEN, does its work. I ran across them as I was trying to get beyond the incident reports to some way forward, and APEN says they work to build resilience in working-class Asian communities. We'll hear from Teresa Siangatonu, touring poet, educator, organizer. She says Bay Area Pacific Islanders are mostly Tongan and Samoan, with some Hawaiians and others. Like Asians, they're mostly essential workers in food, warehouses, airports, health care. They're educators, students. And first off, we're going to hear from Elvina Wong, campaign organizing director for APEN, who says the Asian community in the Bay Area is very diverse. Chinese, yes, with a 200-year history in California, plus Vietnamese, Laotians, Thai, Filipinos, all with diverse needs.
I think it's easy to conflate Asian as just East Asian, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, when really I think a lot of the violence and crimes that we're seeing and the ones that are getting a lot of attention are actually happening to our Southeast Asian refugee communities, to Filipino communities. And there's a way that I think the stories are getting woven to push a certain type of narrative, which is to prove that we've been victimized and that we're weak. And I think a lot of these crimes and violence and situations that are happening are crimes of opportunity, really about the economic crisis that we're in right now, where we've seen many, many failures of our government system to actually take care of our people.
You really took us a long way, Elvina. You're expanding the problem beyond visual ethnic groups, for one thing.
I mean, I really appreciate this question. How are we contextualizing the violence and framing it? Especially like to communicate to your listeners in Hawaii, which is a predominantly, you know, Asian Pacific Islander region that's vastly different from the Bay Area, where the Bay Area has a population of Black community being in community with Asian folks. That is a different experience than on island from my experience being in Hawaii. For decades, long before Alvina and I were even born, there has been a solidarity amongst Asian communities and Black communities in the Bay Area that's deeply rooted in struggle, in collective organizing, in triumph, and victory, that oftentimes is not what's being given a platform when we're talking about this current violence. I think it's violent that gentrification has ravaged the Bay Area for decades now and has displaced longtime residents, primarily Black and Brown folks, immigrant communities. If we're only talking about the physical violence we see and not all of the other forms of violence that we don't see, then are we really getting to the root of trying to end the violence rather than just reacting to it?
Geez, Teresa, you're pointing out how minority communities do have relationships through economic hardship, as Elvina was saying. Because Elvina was in a weird position. I listened to Leung, who I believe is the head of Stop AAPI Hate, that listing. I heard him describe acts of violence against perceived Chinese as horrific. And I had a really hard time accepting that description of it. How does that grab you?
I think that what we have seen in, especially at the beginning of the pandemic and being scapegoated by the previous administration as the cause of the pandemic, folks were being yelled at for being Chinese and go home and all these things that are horrific, especially in the Bay Area where we've had some of the longest legacy of Asian American Pacific Islanders, immigrants and refugees, like not just decades, but centuries long history here. You were seeing lots of tagging that were like, kill Chinese, go home, or F Chinese people. And that just seems so bizarre when we've been living in the community together for multiple generations. I feel like those are horrific moments. And
Alvina, I have to really feel what you're saying, because that word horrific, you know, is applied globally, and it has such a deep meaning that in these cases, I guess I don't see the bloodshed. So I don't see the numbers. This puts me in a really weird position because I'm measuring and I feel like, oh, well, this isn't half as bad as I don't even want to say.
If it helps to reframe a little, I think where I'm at is that it's just heartbreaking and in some ways devastating to know that the place that we've called home for the last 20 plus years, or some of us who are born here, are continuously othered and attacked and verbally or physically harassed just by being who we are.
That must be what it felt like only 80 years ago when posters went up saying persons of Japanese ancestry report to authorities.
One thing I want to be specific about, and I don't speak on behalf of the entire Pacific Islander community, but I would say that this violence is particularly happening to Asian people, that violence isn't happening to Pacific Islanders as much as people use AAPI hate in the hashtags or in the naming of this. When I see violence done into our communities, of course it's painful, but I have to stay focused on the fact that this pain is global. We need to stay focused for the long run to really understand this violence. Otherwise, we're going to keep going tit for tat, putting the onus on Black people or putting the onus on individuals and things like that. We really need to pull back and really understand the systems of this.
What do we do for the long game, Teresa?
We have to be able to stay strong and diligent to learning. Past social movements have taught us strategies that worked really well when they were fighting these exact same battles during the civil rights movement, during the anti-war movement, and understanding what failed and what didn't work for them and improving on that and learning from our elders while they're still here. And I think the Bay Area does that really well. I think we have a lot of movement history within our communities that we learn from. Mass media is not interested in that. You have to be patient with justice. They want to hear, who are we going to lock up and who's going to be held responsible for this? That's what they want to hear. But that's another part of the tension right now, because a lot of us are trying to move away from alternatives that use arrests and convictions as our answer. We know that those tactics have not ensured safety for a long time.
There's an undoing that needs to happen. When we talk about environmental justice, we talk a lot about restoring the ecology that has been damaged. And so there's a lot of repair, restoration, reparations that are due to folks who have been hurt, and also a big, big investment in something else. This is the time for us to have a different system and a different future forward. And what we can do is invest in, again, healing, deep healing that is really transformative to say, I've done harm. This is what accountability and responsibility to that harm looks like. This is what I need to do to repay and repair. And here are my new commitments moving forward so that I make sure I myself never do it again and no one else in my community does it again. There has to be real deep investment into healing resources and in all of that, you know, in the Bay Area especially, but most major cities. It's like secure housing. Have real resources to affordable housing. Make sure that there's actually opportunities for living wage, meaningful work that people can do so that they can have good quality lives. Make sure that people have access to affordable healthcare, mental health care, emotional health, and the healing work that we're talking about, and education. We need to invest in education and not just punishment. And so I think there are definitely real tangible policy shifts we can do, things that look at our city, county, state, or federal budget and how we're using our resources.
With you, Teresa, as an artist, where do you go for inspiration of dreaming up the new path? Because somebody's going to paint me the picture of where we're going.
I mean, as a poet, I love being an artist and I love languaging a new world, the alternative world, right? And so poets like Maya Angelou, like June Jordan, and these are folks that we've lost that are now ancestors to us. James Baldwin spoke so much about the responsibility of an artist. Black liberation has for years been a blueprint that a lot of our communities look for, because we have seen Black folks during slavery dreaming of freedom in ways that I know my Pacific Islander community has borrowed tactics from. And so poetry is definitely a site of inspiration. People who can visualize and create art that just names the world for what we want it to be and doesn't like second guess whether or not it will get enough votes or whether or not, you know, we can meet in the middle with white supremacists. It's like, no, like we can get to the world we want because there was once a time in which people dreamed of a world with prisons, with police. So let's dream of one without them. We can dream of a different world too.
You know, are other Asians like yourself, Alvina, in the Bay Area afraid to go out?
I think they are afraid to go out, one part in because of COVID and another part because it just feels like everyone's against us right now. All the stories that we're hearing are about getting robbed or mugged or carjacked at gunpoint, which is true. In this moment, those things are happening more often. And it's also happening very highly in Latino and Black neighborhoods as well. In the Bay Area this year, we had 15 gun-related murders in the first month. And all of those were happening in Deep East Oakland and West Oakland, which are predominantly Black neighborhoods. Predominantly Black neighborhoods and Latino neighborhoods also have a very deep mix of Asian immigrant and refugee communities as well. So there is like an overall tenseness that I think our folks are going through right now, just feeling like, I don't know what's going to happen to me. And also really, I think what I'm hearing a lot is like, I'm really afraid for my aunties and my uncles. I'm really afraid for my grandparents. I'm really afraid for my own parents who are at an elderly age. I think there is a moment now that is creating more and more fear. And what we want to be able to do is create more and more care for each other. I think that it is getting worse in some cases because now that there's so much attention into Chinatown, a lot of the crime and violence is getting pushed out into neighboring areas. So I do feel like it's been on the rise consistently and it is still increasing. And in Oakland, the police department has had the biggest budget they've had in the last 10 years. And still crimes are on the rise. We've also heard outside of Oakland, police have also been responsible for killing mentally ill Filipino man. So I think we are all on edge because we don't know who to call and who to trust and where to go when we are in need.
Alvina Wong, campaign organizing director for the Asian Pacific Environmental Network. They do their work in Oakland and the Bay Area. We also heard from poet, educator, activist Teresa Siangatonu. Communities under pressure. And suspicion, tension between races, maybe long simmering, emerges